All right, great to have the professor with us on a beautiful Sunday morning. Whoa, how are you today?
Marty, I'm great. Happy Father's Day to you, sink or slide or bone chip, and all the dads out there.
Absolutely. I was just thinking of Bonnie and Greg and, of course, Robin and Evan and Aaron and the kids. And, yeah, they've made their calls already on Happy Father's Day, so I appreciate it. But, whoa, fathers and sons and daughters, it's baseball. Somehow there's that connection. And I always love to touch on that with you, your father and baseball. It's always a good story.
Well, no, you're right. And, you know, the older we get, the more sentimental we get about these things, you know, thinking back to your youth. And I was one of the lucky ones. I came from a small town in Connecticut and loving parents and had all the support that I needed. And, you know, the thing that stands out from my dad, we always had sports on. I mean, not only the love of baseball, which, you know, it's because of him, but it was any sport, whether it was golf or football or hockey or tennis, you know, we always had the sports on, and that's where the competitive spirit started to emerge in me when I was just a little kid in the roughhousing in the house. But I'll give you one story of my dad and how supportive and how much he fought and cared about myself, my brother, and my sister as a dad is in Little League. I was 9 years old, and, you know, in Little League you play for, you know, the minors, or you play for the majors. The 11 and 12-year-olds are in the majors. And my brother was 3 years older. He was playing for the majors team, and they had a real good team, and I was playing for the minors team. Well, about halfway through the season, you know, they decided to call me up to the majors at a 9-year-old and play with the 12-year-olds because I was pretty good. I wasn't like Michael Jordan, not Michael Jackson. Michael Jordan, who couldn't make his high school team, right? I was pretty good like most professional athletes are, you know, in Little League. So they called me up, and the parents of the 12-year-old team found out about this, and they started a petition and to not let me play. And the petition was signed by all these parents. And the reason they put on there was because I might get hurt. Hmm. Well, back in Colchester, Connecticut, where our field was on our town green, you know, the old New England towns, you always had a green in the center of town. And we had a baseball field there. Well, my dad got a hold of this petition. And right before the game, and all the parents were sitting there, he grabbed the petition. He went over the silver bleachers and he held it up. And he read him the right act, saying, "You people signing this petition, you don't want my son to play because you say he's going to get hurt." He called him out. He goes, "Well, I'm his father. I'll make sure he won't get hurt. The only reason you don't want him playing here is because he's good." And he called them all out. And that's one example of numerous times that he just stuck up for me, my brother, and my sister, and fought for us. And that's what dads do, and that's the way he was.
I love it. What a great story. And sitting there as a 9-year-old watching him do that, what did you think?
Well, you know, I didn't remember it all that well. You know, thank goodness my brother fills me in on a lot of these things that happened when we were kids. And he shares stories with me that, you know, some of them I don't remember. You know, I was nine. I'm not in the moment. And It's really great that my brother has a real good handle on some of these things that my dad fought for.
Yeah, Raph said that to me this morning. He said, you know, all these things that we go through as children, and we don't realize it until we get a little bit older and realize the things that were being taught to us. Raph brought that up today. And for all the fathers who are not with us anymore, or the people who stood in to be fathers, those are the lessons we learned. So great story, Wo. That was a good one. So how did you do as a 9-year-old playing?
Well, I did pretty good, you know. I was that was my claim to fame. When I talk to these big leaguers, you know, I can't talk about my major league career, but I can talk about my little league career, high school career, right?
I love it. Very good. All right. Well, yesterday you wore the uniform of the Sea Lions. What do you think about that, first of all?
Yeah, I got a couple texts. People loving the uniform. Family member Sean, he loved the uniform up there. He's up in Seattle and a big fan of the Negro Leagues. They were very comfortable. You know, usually when we wear the throwback uniforms, you're wearing the wool. And thank goodness they weren't wool, so they were very comfortable. I didn't like the result with the uniform yesterday. But, you know, Brad Grimes, our clubhouse guy, explained the story about the bear on the uniform, because it was the San Francisco Sea Lions. He said that the San Francisco Seals couldn't afford uniforms, so they had to borrow somebody else's uniform, and it had the bear. It was the San Francisco Bears, and that's why they had a bear on the Sea Lion uniform, and that's what they played with.
Boy, amazing. You know, there's a story that maybe Willie Mays' father played on the Sea Lions. It's never been confirmed. I think John Shea did some research on that. But that was 1946, and Toni Stone, a female, played on the Sea Lions, and we did stories about her. So very interesting day. I'm glad you guys did it. And now what do you do with the uniform? Do you have to turn that back in, or do you get to keep it?
Yeah, we turn most everything back in, and Brad, our clubhouse guy, is real good. He usually gets us a duplicate down the road if he has enough. But, you know, they take those uniforms, like on all these days, and they sell them, or they, you know, put them into the dugout stores, and they're available for people to get online, et cetera. So, yeah, I don't have that one at this point, but if he has enough, he'll get us one of those.
Very nice, very nice. Hey, the Phillies made a change in pitching today. I was all ready to talk about Spencer Howard and this young man that's probably going to go three or four innings. But after the bullpen game, I guess they moved Zach Eflin up. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's true. We knew that last night. There was some speculation that could happen. You know, they had an off day before they came here. And, you know, maybe they knew they were going to do that the whole time. You know, a little gamesmanship. Who knows? But we did know last night that he was pitching. And it seems like in today's game, the rotation isn't set in stone like it was, you know, years back. It seems like everybody, whether they use an opener or where they have, they call it a bullpen game now, right? It's like we don't have five starters. We have a bullpen game. They're using the pitching a little bit different. You know, guys are shuffled around. They're only throwing three innings here instead of throwing five. So, yeah, it is a little more in flux with starting rotations, in my opinion, this year, looking at the way it's been going.
Well, you had an amazing game this week, the second game against Arizona. First of all, how about Arizona? 2-30, 5-39. They've lost 16 straight again. And, well, how about that, being a professional athlete? How about that?
Well, it's terrible. I mean, you know, if you've ever been on the on that side of a drubbing or a bad year, it gives you some gray hair, and it makes your stomach turn. It's not fun for anybody, and I really feel for them. You know, it's very difficult to go through a string like that. And I'm glad, you know, we were able to beat them, but I honestly hope that that, you know, they can win a few games, because that's not good. That's not good for anybody.
No, well, Yastrzemski had the big home run, Woe, and, you know, it's funny. There was a little clip. You could see Yaz taking the swing, and as the swing was being completed, you're, like, almost jumping. And so it made me think that you knew it right away that it was going out.
Yeah, you know, I've watched every ball that was hit in this park since it opened, and, you know, I knew right away that ball was going to be gone. It was almost a little Carlton Fisk-like in his big home run in Boston, when it was going to be fair or foul, and he was waving it fair, stood at home plate. That was the only question for me, is whether it was going to hook and maybe be foul, but, you know, after a second or two, you could see that it was clearly fail and fair. And yeah, exciting moment. You know, we all felt like we could come back and win that game. Even when we were down 7-0, there was decisions made in the game. We all felt like we still had a shot. And by God, our guys kept fighting, and we did come back and win with that big home run was the difference maker.
You know, there are games during a season, Will, and I think this team, I said it yesterday, is evolving a little bit. Look at Lamont Wade, the week he's had. Even Vosler, and I give you credit for that. You called it in spring training. You said this guy can swing the pole. I remember you said that. But I see evolution happening with this team from games like Tuesday night.
I think you're right. Anytime you win games late and you're able to come back, it just continues to build that confidence and that belief that you're not out of the game. And a comeback win like that, has a lasting effect. And, you know, we've been pretty good this year. You know, I think to yesterday, I don't know, today we had the best record in baseball. So that confidence is we can feel it. It's palpable. The guys believe. You can sense it in the clubhouse. And that's what you want to have. And, you know what? We never feel like we're out of any game. And, you know, we face some good pitchers, and we'll have some good pitchers ahead of us. But like I try to tell these guys, if we want to be the best, you have to beat the best. So hopefully we'll continue and continue to play good baseball.
You know, it's funny, on this Father's Day, it made me think of a story. You know, and believe it or not, I coached the Pony League team in El Cerrito, and Evan was on the team. And we had Nathan Haynes, who became a draft pick of the A's and played for the Angels and the Cardinals. And he's a great kid, great player, and his father was John Haynes. And we would have games, and in the top of the first inning, if we were in the field, the other team, you know, scored 5 runs. And, boy, John would say, oh, this is trouble, and he'd hang his head, and I'd look at everyone and say, have we hit yet? We haven't hit yet. And as the father, you know, as his coach, what did I know? But I used to bring that up all the time. I said, we haven't hit yet. Come on, let's go. And I had that feeling for you guys on Tuesday night.
Yeah, and that's great. You know, when we can feel it and the fans can feel it, and that's the attitude you need to have in anything, right? You have to believe. I mean, especially in sport. I mean, you can't do anything to your full potential in sports unless you're confident in your ability. And I can tell you right now, you know, these guys are confident at the plate, and all the great athletes are. You know, they don't expect to get beat, no matter what the circumstances. So that was good coaching, Marty, good coaching.
Yeah, we played the Hawks, and I had the kids bring pictures of Hawks, and then I burnt them before the game. How about that? I was crazy.
Okay. I guess you were. Did you learn that from your dad?
No, from Uncle Abe. My father passed away when I was little, but you know, I played sports, and I said, all right, we got to get these kids, you know, jacked up today. And I had them all bring pictures of Hawks, and we burnt them before the game and went out and won a doubleheader and won the league.
Nice. Oh, congratulations. That's nice. That's a good story. I like that. I didn't see that coming from you, Marty, in your coaching years.
It was funny. Hey, Cueto put on quite a show the other day, but from your point of view, you sent him. And it looked like he was chugging, whoa, and that was a ball that Wade hit, and Wade had a good week. But how about sending Cueto?
Yeah, well, you know, he took off. It was a little Omar Vizquel-like when that pop-up would go up and Omar would knock his hat off and run, you know, backwards, looking over his head so that the hat wouldn't screen, looking back as he's running towards the outfield wall to see the ball better coming over his head. And Johnny did that right away, you know, to show off that nice hair and that headband. He knocked the helmet off and he took off. And I said, uh-oh, here we go. And, you know, his sprint speed, I was told, was just as good as Lamont Wade's. They had him rounding the bases. And I got that from the analytics department. I guess that someone tweeted that out there. And, you know, I had to almost stop him because I was so worried that he was going to pull a muscle. Because when you go 90 feet as hard as you can, it's not as dangerous as going 3 times that. And that's what he had to do. So I was so concerned that he might pull a muscle. The longer he kept going, is I almost stopped him a little at third because I thought Herrera was going to catch it. You know, he probably should have, and he misses. So I gave him a quick, you know, hand, like, slow down, and then I continued to wave him. I tell you, he didn't miss a beat. He was one of our best base runners of the year. He didn't stop completely. He didn't quit. He saw me, and then he saw me wave him, and he just downshifted for about a half second, and then he continued. And then on the way home, I knew he was going to make it easy. I started chasing him down the line because I wanted him to take it easy, and he was still going there, and I was screaming, easy, 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 but he didn't hear me.
I loved it. I saw you yelling at him as you went down the line. You know, we'll go to school with the professor on this Sunday morning. A couple of things. One, Crawford sort of got caught in no man's land on the ball that Harper deked him in right field, but Crawford played it correctly. Take us through that just a little bit.
Yeah, you know, there's some plays on the field that just happen so quick, and that's your biggest fear as a third base coach and a runner at a base. It's when it's a line drive, right? Now, you're taught to go back to tag, which he didn't do originally because it looked like the ball was going to be in there. And it's a tough read because it happens fast. It's not like a high fly ball. So he went off the base. Then he started to go back as Harper was getting closer to their ball because, you know, you don't want to get doubled off, taken off to home, and he catches the ball. So as he started back, you know, that by this time he saw the ball just landed in front of him, and now you have a, you know, a guy with a plus arm standing in shallow right field, and he has to go because Duggar had a good read on it, and he was coming to third, and Craw just hightailed it home. And, you know, there's really not a lot of coaching you can do at that moment. There's particular plays like that, which is the most difficult for a runner. You think about you're standing on third, and there's a line drive to left, and it's going to either be caught by the shoestrings or it's going to land. You know, what do? You got to make sure it's down first, and then hopefully you can score. But I've actually seen line drives in that manner where the guy on third couldn't score because he had to wait so long. Mm-hmm. And then, boom, the guy has the ball, and he's standing real shallow, and you can't score. So Craw had to go because he saw Duggar was on his way here, and Harper's throw was offline, and he made it.
Boy, great play. Great play. All right, one more here. yesterday, Archie Bradley was complaining about the mound, and my question was, where was Greg Elliott? The grounds crew took him like 15 minutes. Where were they, and what was going on?
I think they were getting a Pete's coffee and a cha-cha bowl at that point in time. You know, the communication part of it with this COVID is a little bit off. You know, they have their little area where they hang out. Usually most of them are down in the clubhouse. But they do go back to their location. But, the radios weren't working the way they were supposed to. And it just took a little longer than normal. But we'll make sure, you know, that doesn't happen again, and we have the lines of communication correct here.
So what was Bradley complaining about?
Oh, I don't know. You know, everybody, steps different when you land. Usually it's the landing point. I didn't really watch because I was trying to find the grounds crew myself. I don't know if it had to do with the rubber, where his, you know, balance foot was on the rubber, or where most likely is where he's landing. You see guys digging that out all the time in both locations. He probably just wanted that, dressed up a little. But I'm not sure because I didn't really watch the work they did on the mound.
Yeah, well, I was looking for Greg Elliott, but I never saw him. So does a great job, the groundskeeper. But it was one of those moments that what's going on here? So that's part of baseball. What can I tell you?
Yeah, it happens.
Let's bring Bill in. Bill, good morning. How are you?
Hey, good morning, gentlemen. How are you guys doing? I'm glad to hear Ron. He's at the ballpark getting ready for this final game against Philly. Both of you doing good?
Yeah, so far so good. Father's Day, and it's a Sunday at the ballpark, and Zach Eflin, and what about on the Giants side? Sammy Long today, how about that?
Well, I tell you what, I'm excited for him. I'm glad he's starting the game instead of the opener. I think he'll be fine, Ron. I want to ask Ron a quick question here. You know, in that Arizona series, Castellanos came in with a gray glove, and this was before Yaz hit the Grand Slam, and they changed it to a black glove. Now, there's a lot of teams that the pitchers are using colorful gloves. Is this something that you guys saw, or was that just mainly from the umpire?
Great question, Bill, and happy Father's Day to you. But
thanks, Ron.
Yeah, no, it's you can't have a gray glove, and it probably has to do with the gray uniforms on the road. A pitcher cannot use a gray glove, and no matter what. So that was, you can have a colorful glove, you could have multicolored. You know, there was a point where it had to be two-thirds one particular color. I'm not sure if that rule is still in place. Even the shoes, MLB had a rule where the shoes had to be two-thirds one color. And I don't know if you noticed, Bill, but we see pitchers wearing white shoes on the mound now, which I always thought would be more distracting, especially if you were facing Juan Marichal and he sticks that foot up in your face. But they allow that. But a gray glove is not to be used by a pitcher.
Hey, it's interesting to watch these celebrations now. And, Bill, I don't know if they celebrated in any way home runs when you played, but, the Phillies have a hat. They have sort of like a straw hat they put on a guy if it's a home run. The Padres, Kim, believe it or not, hit a home run to win the game last night. And they put a chain around him, and he was doing the Gangnam Style like Dave Fleming and John Miller in the dugout. And it's all from the University of Miami. It's all from the U, you know, with the chain of, you know, when you did a, you know, a good thing. What do you think about it? And, Bill, did you ever come across stuff like this? Well,
you know, not to the degree that we see it now, and that's our society and the celebrations in all sports. You know, I think back, and, you know, football was the first one for me that really had these crazy celebrations after touchdowns. And I know the league tried to curtail some of that, but I think in this day and age, this is just the way it is. And you see the kids on the little league fields and the high school fields doing the same stuff. And, you know, there's a lot of dead time in baseball, and these guys are trying to have a little fun when they hit the homer, and it's kind of commonplace, but I don't think it was very common back when Bill pitched. What do you think, Bill?
No, I don't think anything was that, because the next guy would have been drilled into ribs. They just didn't do that back in our day, Ron. I mean, that was one thing. You know, it wasn't a pitcher maybe looking, but that infielder's watching as they touch home plate and go in that dugout. It was common high five, pat him on the rear, and that was about it. But the celebrations are the new thing, Ron and Marty. I mean, you see this at the Padres. The Padres do it. Tatis Jr. does it. You got Bauer doing it. So, you know what? We got to open our eyes and understand the youth of the game is changing it, and we just have to watch and be happy with it, I guess.
Well, Bill, I'll say this. You know, my favorite's still the silent treatment. And when
that's
the guy
the
hits
best.
A homer, especially when it's his first home run and everybody sits down and ignores him. I think that's good fun.
I like that one. That's a good one. Hey, you know, this week is going to be different. The umpires are going to be checking. Bill's got a great interview coming up with Ed Montague. You know, we love Eddie. Talk about this a little bit, but I told you, don't shake hands with anybody. The umpires now all of a sudden become the police force and trying to figure out if anyone's using that tacky stuff. How about what's going to happen starting tomorrow?
Yep, it is. It's happening tomorrow, and I think you've already seen a decline in some pitchers' stuff around the league from what I'm hearing from certain people. You know, they're cleaning it up, and they can't use the pine tar as much and the mixture that, they've got from the Angels years ago and pitchers have been using for a long, long time. I mean, my guys always tried to get a grip on the ball. And I think it's a good thing. Look, you know, if they can find a substance or a way to make the ball a little bit more grippable, and especially in cold weather, I think it's going to be a good thing. Whereas Bill can speak to this, you know, more than I can, what it's like on the mound. But, you know, guys have pitched naked with regular rubbed-up balls for a long, long time. And that's just the way it was. And I think the league's doing the right thing by trying to get a handle on this, because the spin on the balls, the breaking balls, the velocities, it does affect it. And it's been proved to me by watching what's going on. And I'm glad the umpires are on board. I just hope, and you'll get it from Eddie here today, that the umpires enforce it. If that's going to be a rule, then the umpires need to enforce it and not look the other way and make it become another rule that's not enforced. So we'll see what happens.
You know, Ron and Marty, I talked to several different pitchers this week, you know, veteran guys, alumni guys, as well as some of the young guys on the teams. And, you know, everybody wants this to happen, and the guys that are really arguing about it are really the guys using the ticky-tack stuff. So, you know, you listen to these guys talking about it, whining about it, and then you turn around like Glasnow, you know, and Bauer, and they're saying, oh, how can you do this in the middle of the season? Well, you know what? You should have thought about that in the beginning of the season, or even last year when you were using it. Now you got to go out there and figure it out. So Eddie's got some great stuff coming up, and I'm sure umpires around the league, Ron, are going to be watching whatever hand they throw with to see what they're touching on that body.
Yeah,
as I said, well, don't shake hands with any pitchers.
I know. Well, you know, we've had a couple discussions, and one concern is, you know, infielders put pine tar on their gloves. And the ball thrown around, and, you know, I mean, catchers have had it on their shin guards that, you know, get the ball tacky and throw it back. Third basemen typically would have it in there, and they'd rub it in the pine tar and give it back to the pitcher. And a lot of infielders have it in their gloves just to have it tacky so the ball sticks in the glove. You want it to stick a little bit. The glove gets real dry in hot weather and or real cold weather, and it makes it a little tackier as well. So, you know, the concern is that it's going to be an innocent thing, but if that ball is thrown to the pitcher and they deem it has that substance on it, it's going to be a suspension. Now, they can still use the rosin, as Eddie will say. We saw a pitcher with the Diamondbacks. The whole half of his hat was covered in dust, you know, in the rosin. And that's okay. The umpire told me, you know, if the rosin is on the uniform or on the hat, they'll make him change the hat. They'll make him change his pants if it's all over his pants and he's using it. But the sticky stuff is going to be different, right? That's a suspension. So that'll be a good interview to hear, and I'm sure Eddie will give us all the details on that.
Yeah, really good. Boy, it's going to be good stuff. Well, we'll have a great day today. Before we say goodbye, you know, I'm just looking out here. The weather is gorgeous. You came in with the rutabagas today and the strawberries, I'm sure. But it's just a serene day, and I was thinking about River Islands as we wrap it up. It'd be nice to be on that kayak today.
Yeah, it certainly would, you know, and there's no fog over there. It's clear blue sky, and we have a little fog here, which is going to burn off. But with the weather we've been having out in the East Bay and places, I can't think of a better place to be out on waterways, lakes, rivers, and enjoying the ball game on the radio, because we have to listen to it on the radio out there in River Islands today because it's not televised, right?
Peacock.
I won't get into that, but I think it's been a bad weekend to make that decision. On Father's Day, a lot of people aren't able to see the game. So you may as well go out to River Islands today and enjoy everything they have to offer and take a look at those homes.
Beautiful. RiverIslands.com. Go to the islands. I love it. I'm ready to go, I'll tell you that. All right. Well, have a good afternoon, and we'll be watching you. You did make one play yesterday. I thought you looked pretty smooth. You actually did almost a pirouette and threw it into the stands.
Yeah, I got to throw them. When I just throw them to the ball boy or don't throw them in the stands, people are screaming at me. I'm getting shamed into trying to throw them over the net. So I've been getting in the arm in shape to do that. So you'll see more of that from me.
All right, well, take care.
Thanks, Ron.
All right, guys, have a great day.
All right, that is the third base coach of the San Francisco Giants, the Professor Ron Wotus. Bill, this interview with Ed Montague is going to be fabulous. I can't wait to hear it.
Yeah, you know, one of the things he said, Marty, is, you know, he is not observing the umpires like he did years back. He is now just observing the whole game. So it's going to be hard for him to go into the clubhouse where the umpires are and talk to him. That was one of the things we talked about off air. But he's right for it. He wants to see the game cleaned up. And I think we'll sooner or later find out the guys that were using it and find out the guys that weren't.
Boy, interesting. All right, you can take us out and get us ready for the interview. Go ahead.
Yeah, coming up on Talking Baseball, a conversation with a Major League Baseball umpire who's retired, Ed Montague, and that's all coming up on KNBR, the sports leader.